What's up, y'all? It's Thomas Houck, and you're listening to Breakfast with the Gators.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium & Gale Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. And we gladly welcome recurring guest, the Orlando Sentinel's Edgar Thompson. How are you doing tonight, Edgar?
Fellas, good to see you. Not recurring enough. Thomas Houck with the intro? That's impressive.
Yeah, he sent that. He sent that to us when we interviewed him back in May. So if you have not listened to that, hoop season's also coming around the horizon. Make sure you find that on our YouTube page.
Almost as impressive as Jackson's haircut. Not that I'm here to give hair tips, but it looking pretty sharp.
That thing's usually put product in it for our big guest. He had to put some product in the hair, it looks like.
That's good.
Right.
Self-care is the best care, right?
Yep.
We always maintain that.
We got plenty of routines over here.
Well, a lot to discuss. We had fall camp start, I believe, last Wednesday. We're almost now a week in, just hitting it off. Edgar, is this your seventh coach? Did you start with Ron Zook? Did you ever cover him as your time in Gainesville?
Oh, yeah, that was my first one. So Zook, Urban, Boone, Mack, Mullen, Napier, Coach Summerall. I'm on the precipice of my 20th Gator football season with like a 5-6 year break in between where I missed the height of the program, honestly, at least since Spurrier with Tebow Harvin 07-08. I missed those two seasons, but I also missed all the drama surrounding Urban's retirement, unretirement. I was glad to miss all that. So take the good with the bad. It's been a lot of bad, though. I have seen a national title, obviously, 06. That was exhilarating. But, God, man, there hadn't been a lot of really fun seasons. I mean, 2020 was fun for a good while, even though COVID was a nightmare. 19 was pretty entertaining. I mean, the LSU game was fantastic. I mean, maybe McElwain beating Ole Miss. You had Billy Utah. And boom, the 11-win 12 season, 2012 season was fun, but man, it was miserable football in a lot of ways. The defense was phenomenal, but the offense was putrid. So there hadn't been a whole lot of high points in this long run of Gator football for myself.
Well, even when we get to this time period of the offseason, we're post-SEC media days, fall camp has started. It's easy to drink the Kool-Aid at this time of year, especially when we're accustomed to new faces on the sidelines. Are you buying into the Summerall hype?
I joked last year when the Billy situation went off the rails that I literally had like almost like when you're a little kid and get the stain, like the cool milk or like Kool-Aid, cherry Kool-Aid. I had that. I mean, I had drank the Kool-Aid on Billy last year big time. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not drinking it on Summerall, but I see enough warts that I know that this is going to be there are going to be growing pains in year one, but you got to expect that. I mean, Urban's first season, I remind people, I'm at Alabama, and the first play of the game, it was like Brody curled a pro throw. That incredible, remember Prothrow, Tyrone Prothrow, God, what a player, broke his leg, his career ended that day. But first play, they went like 80 yards for a touchdown. And Urban looked like he was just shell-shocked, first loss in 20 games. And then 2 weeks later, he's crying at LSU. So, and then we saw what went on the next year. But these guys, he's going to take his lumps, and they're coming, and he knows it. I don't think he's naive enough. He's not coming here off 12-0 with a team that if there had been a 14 playoff in 04, Urban's team, Utah would have gotten in it. It would have been 4 unbeaten teams. It would have been Auburn, Utah, USC, and I think Oklahoma. They were all unbeaten. That would have been an incredible playoff. But anyway, the point being is Summerall's not coming on that kind of a high, a pretty good high, but not that. And he's a realist, man. He's been in the SEC. Urban had never really had any SEC experience. and then just got run over at Alabama, and then the LSU game just shattered them. So that I expect some down moments with this, but I expect a lot more high, good moments than we had last year, but there weren't many.
Well, we got Jake from New Orleans. He wants to know some of the differences you've noticed between Summerall and the previous hires before their first game is played.
Well, everybody's saying it. He won the offseason like nobody. I mean, Mullen did well. He won the offseason pretty good, and a lot of people had good feelings about Mullen because of his run here with Urban. But, I mean, he's made all the right moves. He's been amazing. He's incredible in front of the microphone. He's smart. He's got presence. He's funny. He's just done all the right things. And he's also, been very honest about the team in terms of its deficiencies and the fact that it's going to, get its ass beat, I think is the words he used, if they don't make a lot of strides. And he's been hard on them at the end of practices, by all accounts. We're not there at the end, but he's been chewing some ass after practices, it sounds like. And that message can get lost. It can get old, and you start tuning it out if it's a guy who just yells all the time. But I think he picks his spots. I'm impressed, man. The guy clearly knows what he's doing. 3-11 win seasons, 4 conference titles, I believe, right? And in 4 seasons. So he clearly is a winner and knows the standard, but I think he's well aware that this isn't close to where it needs to get.
Yeah, and I think that the way that he's talked all offseason, I think, has won over most of the fans. I think people, it's a breath of fresh air hearing some of that realism coming from the head coach and not spot the ball and the empty platitudes that you've heard over the last couple of years. I've seen a lot of the national media types who have spent time one-on-one with Summerall this offseason. Damian Harris did a long thing at CBS Sports where he toured the facility and sat down one-on-one with Summerall. I've seen David Pollack and Brooks Austin and other national guys speaking highly of Summerall. They all come away singing his praises and raving about him as a coach. I know you got the chance to talk to him one-on-one a few weeks ago. What is it about Summerall's personality that gives you confidence that this is going to be different from those last several coaches that you've covered?
Like I used the word a minute ago, there's just a presence about the guy. Urban had it. Like, I remember when Urban walked in the first time for his first press conference, like in the southeast end zone where you're kind of up close, and he walks in and you're just kind of looking at him like, all right. Like, you just could tell there was something about him. And I think I get a sense of Summerall. I mean, Urban, I mean, that's like top 10 all-time coach, 3 national titles. We're not going there yet. But there is something about Summerall that he just has kind of that it factor, to be cliche. And, I mean, I thought a lot of Mullen. I thought he offensively was a real – I mean, he's a genius at offense. But a lot of the other parts didn't merit his attention to the degree they needed to. So, yeah, there is something just to that, having that about you, right? And he seems to have it. I'll be surprised if this doesn't ultimately work out.
Edgar, if there'd be one area about his presence, where do you think that the team would kind of feed off of that most? Because obviously I think a lot of people he's not obviously going to be calling the defense, but having a defensive-minded head coach in for the first time in a while can definitely help that side of the ball. And I think you mentioned Mullen did great in his offseason. He was pitching this relentless effort that we kind of got sick of toward the end of his tenure. Is there any specific area or side of the ball that you see the team really feeding off of Summerall's early presence right now on campus?
Well, first off, and to pitch a Mike Bianchi column that – I told Mike, you should come up to Gainesville and write on Buster. And it's on the Sentinel website right now. Not good column about him. And he made some comment about bringing some fun back, right? And how these guys know what the ethos, culture, whatever you want to call it, of Florida football is. It's scoring points. It's putting exciting style points matter, right, here at Florida. And even if you're winning like Muschamp, 11 wins, people were just like checked out on it because the offense was putrid and they're having to block a punt to beat Louisiana Lafayette, you know? So I think he got that part squared away with Buster first off. But the thing he's bringing to the team is energy, that your team takes on the personality of its coach, right? And Billy's personality was very measured, monotone, low energy. And I'm not saying his teams didn't play hard. I felt like his teams actually rallied quite a bit under Billy, but never were able to really close the deal because of whatever reasons, a lot of it probably coaching in the fourth quarter. But he, but still, this team's going to play with, have grit and toughness, which he talks about. I know this all, you know, platitudes, but that's what he's about, man. He is about being a hard-nosed football team. And we might not even get the full Summerall experience, excuse me, until maybe 28 even. I mean, a two-year window, I think we're going to see a lot in year two, but we're going to see a lot tougher, grittier football team, I think, immediately. But he's going to have this thing up and running, I think, by 28 with a hard-ass football team that's going to – you're just not really going to want to play. Because it's going to leave – it's going to wear you out is the way his goal here. And they're already doing it with the recruiting, at, you know, offensive line at least with Phil Troutwine. And that guy's a serious dude. And attention to detail and accountability to the nth degree. And I think that kind of, the whole program is kind of built on that. The weight room. Look at the accountability and gains that group's made. I mean, that room has – you know, he's held those guys accountable, and the gains are clear with that. So I think that's what he's all about, man. Toughness, accountability, all these kinds of things. And he's not going to let you off the hook for bad practice, a bad rep even. You know, the whole loaf report, you remember that he talked about in the spring, the loaf report, that yeah. They like watch every play, everything. And if you like don't like finish out a play or lackadaisically return to the huddle, man, you're getting called out in front of the team the next day. I mean, they're watching everything.
Yeah, hard not to be excited about that. And then you mentioned obviously bringing in Buster and the new offense. It's kind of the first, I would say, real quarterback battle that we've had since, you know, 2018, 2019 with Franks and Trask.
17, I'd say.
Right. You know, it's kind of, we've always known kind of going in who is the main guy supposed to be. Whereas this year, between Aaron Filo and Tremel Jones, quite frankly, I mean, there's arguments to be had for either side. But the way I see it, and I think the way we kind of see it is right now, it could still be a coin flip. What are you kind of seeing so far as camp started? What are you hearing? Who do you think might be the best fit? Or where do you think that's probably going to end up going as we're about a month away from the season and someone's got to be QB1?
Well, Aaron Filo has the built-in advantage of being in year three now under Faulkner. That's right. Obvious. And the coach wants to be comfortable with all these little things that we really – look, I watch the football mainly. I mean, right, I'm not watching to see who's checking protections, who's getting guys in the right formations. I mean, you know when it's not working and there's delays, penalties. We saw a lot of that under Napier with the just pre-snap – you know, substitution issues, all this stuff, delays a game that were just killer, right? That stuff will just crush you. And you know, against the level of competition the Gators are going to face, you know, from Campbell on, people didn't think Vandy's going to be easy because they are going to be a little down. No all SEC players, only team without one. Clark Legan coach at FSU the last game of the year. I mean, maybe they're going off the rails under Norvell. Maybe he's gone by then. But what if they do rebound? I don't know that Norvell, I think Norvell's proven that he's probably pretty good. I just don't know what they have. But maybe you think those are gimmies? Maybe South Carolina? Okay, South Carolina's got three of the best players in the league at their positions, right? So there are all tough games, in my opinion, in this season after Campbell. So... yeah, I mean, you're going to want a guy who's not making mistakes, who's not getting you in bad plays and all that. So that's going to give Faulkner a real comfort level with Filo. But then again, Tremel Jones, I think, probably has better arm talent and can probably make some plays down the field and maybe Philo can't. And you got a receiving core and a tailback and Jaden Ball who can really catch the football. And maybe you're going to want a guy who can really, you know, as he talked about being a point guard, you know, getting guys involved. We'll see. I mean, Philo's got the edge right now. I mean, wouldn't you say he's got to, just based on experience and comfort level? That doesn't mean he's going to be the quarterback the entire season, even if he is the one on week one.
Yeah, I think that you got to think that he's the leader in the clubhouse coming into fall camp. Obviously, scrimmages during camp are going to probably be what makes or breaks the battle. Obviously, the day-to-day is important. When are the scrimmages, and do you know how many of them there are?
I think two, Saturday, the next 2 weeks.
Got it. Do you guys get to watch any of the scrimmages?
I think we might get a chance to see one of them. That's not official, and I don't think it's one we can necessarily go report on. Just to give us, you know, let us in a little bit, because access, man, is real limited.
Got it.
120-minute window each of the next 3 weeks. That's it. It's the least by far I've ever experienced here. I guess you get the element of surprise only once. McElwain even said that some years back, and I don't see the big deal with it. But Buster does come from the Kirby Smart tree to a degree, and I don't think they're opening the door up there too often. So, and he's got a lot going on, and he's doing a lot of innovative things. And so, you know, hey, going and standing around for, you know, 30 minutes and watching guys do drills and not really even seeing 11-on-11 when you do get a go isn't of huge benefit anyway. So I'm not like really all too upset about it personally, but others might want to see more than me.
So how deep into camp do you think it'll be before a starter gets named publicly? Do you think this is something that gets all the way into game week? Obviously, you know, for the team, the earlier the better. Do you think that it kind of goes on the scrimmage timeline? How do you see that playing out in the next couple of weeks?
I don't think we're going to hear anything until at least the 25th or 24th. I think he's got to have two scrimmages go, right? 15th, 22nd, maybe we get somewhere on that Monday, the 24th. Perhaps by then he'll have clarity and be willing to share. But why? Why not wait till week one? I don't know. Make teams. Not that FAU is really going to be much of a challenge. I mean, they're going to score some points, FAU, potentially. They got the youngest head coach in the country, and he's a real offensive whiz. They led the nation in passing yards per game last year. They also had like 20 interceptions, and they also were like the worst defense in the country. But I don't think it's going to be a tough game, but they might score some points. But so, you know, maybe by the 24th, we might have some clarity, I would think.
I know you guys recently spoke to Tramiel and Aaron Philo, and they talked a lot about their off-the-field relationship, playing golf, I imagine, over there at Hale Plantation. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that, their relationship, and how they've kind of turned into maybe a friendly competition when you're, in fact, competing for a quarterback spot in the SEC?
It's funny because we still do a football section. I mean, we're old school here at the Sentinel. So we do a football section with a lot of stuff in it. And I wrote that story this morning for the section about their competition in golf. You know, I wrote about how Tramiel had like, you know, all he had in front of him was green grass. But when, it, you know, in his chosen game, that's one thing. But in golf, it was another because he's not much of a golfer yet. He has old beat-up used clubs, and Philo's been playing since he was a young kid. So he won that competition. But, no, they do get along. And I talked to Shane Matthews, in fact, for it, and he was like a fifth stringer when he came in 1990, Spurs' first year. Kyle Morris was the incumbent, and they were best friends. They played intramural basketball, church league softball, golf. And even though Morris transferred after the season, he and Shane remained close until, tragically, a year or two ago, Kyle Morris died of cancer. And he said they were like best friends. So it can work that way. But you go through history, and there's a lot of contentious quarterback races too. So they're handling it in the right way to set an example for the team that needs to be set. You know, that, hey, all 100 and whatever 16 guys, man, got to be on the same page and pushing each other, and it's for the greater good. And I'm sure that that's something Summerall has instilled, you know, immediately, because there's so many new guys, right? There are 50 new faces or so and 60 some returners. So to get all these guys on the same page and stuff is a real challenge. And that's kind of just how it is in today's college football.
And if anything has taught us in the recent history, we'll have more than one quarterback play the position this season. So they both need to be prepared.
Certainly.
When their number is called. Let's jump to the mailbag. We got a few responses today. Edgar, a few questions for you. We'll start with Paul from Fort Lauderdale. I know how you just previously mentioned you only got about 20 minutes in the viewing period. But has there been any group that you've been able to observe so far that, in terms of exceeding expectations, has there been one? Do you get enough out of that viewing period?
It's hard to say, man. They're doing like special teams and things. But I will say one thing about special teams that's interesting, and I asked Jonathan Galante about it. They're going to be playing starters on special teams. And I'm not saying Billy didn't or Dan didn't do that, but I think they're going to play their best guys. And I like that. I remember back in 06, Dallas Wilson covered kicks. He was good at it. He also caught 10 touchdowns. So you can do both, but you got to have your best guys in the field. You know, just the energy is great. I mean, Summerall's involved with every group. I mean, he's here, he's there, he's everywhere. But, you know, the you can just see the body changes. That's evident. LJ McCray, I mentioned before we got on here. My Lord, this guy's legs are, like, impressive. You know, he's wearing those short, you know, football pants, showing off those quads now to a degree. But I would, too. I mean, he's got tree trunks, and he has really worked hard. He's added 21 pounds, I think, of lean muscle. Flipped 21 pounds of fat into 21 pounds of lean muscle. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him. And so you're just noticing stuff like that about bodies and things. And, you know, it isn't like you can get a real beat on, like, what position group is doing what.
For sure. Next one we got from Jake from New Orleans. Question mark is at offensive line and who starts in the secondary, as previously discussed here on Breakfast with the Gators. What are you seeing there? I think we have a pretty good idea of maybe a couple interior pieces on the offensive line and boundary in the secondary. But what are you seeing in terms of filling out maybe at the tackle position, and then who's getting the nod back in the quarterback and the defense and at safety?
I think I know Jake from New Orleans.
he's got a reputation.
So, Harrison Moore, I think, is really impressed. And Summerall singled him and Shanahan, TJ Shanahan, the Penn State transfer guard, out as guys just who are tone setters. He talked about Shanahan last spring even. He and Brandon Bett have each day delivered the kind of physicality he's looking for from everyone. So I think Shanahan's definitely, you know, going to be a factor. And Harrison Moore, there's some guy, I don't know who he is, but he did like a film breakdown of the offensive line.
He played for Phil Trotline.
Huh?
Yeah, he played for Phil at Penn State, I believe. Is that accurate, Nev?
Is it Lance something?
The not Ogorji.
Well, Shanahan did, but Harrison Moore was Georgia Tech transfer.
Yeah, the guy that did
Moore, Georgia Tech, Shanahan was Penn State, and then there's a tackle from Stanford and a tackle from Penn State.
Who just did the film breakdown?
Film breakdown.
I was just watching those earlier.
But bottom line, yeah, you can go seek it out. Harrison Moore is athletic, man. I mean, this guy, like, is getting beat and just flips his hips and gets leverage again. And he seems really scrappy. It was fun to watch. I mean, it was like, it makes you realize just the effort required to, like, stay in front of one of these guys and maintain, you know, position and not just get steamrolled. So he looks impressive. Jagori, I have his pronunciation. In fact, let's get it correct. Matthew Hutchinson if he's watching, is going to be pissed because he puts these things in the back of the deal. Let's see. How do you say his name? It's Ugorji. Yeah, he played guard at Stanford. And would he lead the ACC in snaps by a true freshman at that position? But they're putting him at left tackle now. And we'll see how that works out. But I think they love him. He's like 19. He's young. But he could be, has real potential. And the other guy, Bryce Lovett, has come on. He's totally transformed his body. And he really had a tough time at right tackle and lost a lot of confidence. And they're playing him both there and interiorly. Caden Jones started 10 games last year. And then Najee Harris, you got to think, is going to be a three-year starter at left guard. So he's the only guy on this team, though, who has more than 10 starts in the SEC. So there's a lot of work to be done there. But, you know, he's going to find a good combination, Troutwine. He's not going to, you know, just stand pat on that hand if it doesn't work out.
It seems like they have the bodies there. They just—it's like you said—they don't know quite exactly how it's going to shake out by the time we get to the end of camp. The next question we have
so much real quickly is about communication. He's like pairing guys together. He's juggling how you're communicating. It's all this stuff we don't think about, right? Maybe you guys do. I certainly don't. It's like just the little subtleties and nuances and just the techniques and all these things that are required to like execute a play, whether you're the quarterback, you know, getting guys in the right place, or the offensive lineman communicating because they're stunning and showing you looks that are confusing. So I think Troutwine's just going to find the guys that work together the best, even if maybe, you know, maybe a guy might have a little teeny bit more upside. I mean, if he doesn't work as well with certain guys, he's going to have to earn his way into the lineup.
Yeah, the next question we had was Jake from Jacksonville, who wants to know about any impact freshmen that have stood out during the offseason and now into fall camp. Obviously limited in what you've seen, but body-wise, you can kind of tell the guys that look a little bit different. What have you seen out there from the young guys?
Throw some names at me.
You got Damian Gross. He is the highly touted receiver from Texas. No.
He got beaten on a play the other day by Justin Williams, the Gainesville kid, just on a, like a, you're trying to block the guy, and Williams just blew right by him, and Gross even was like upset. But I mean, Justin Williams is really good here.
It so seems like
he's got size, like, man.
Who's the young defensive end edge kid to KJ Ford from Texas? Oh, yeah. Seems like he's kind of on that Jaden Woods track when it comes to getting the hype about the weight gain in the offseason and the weight he's moving around.
No, for sure. And I mean, look, man, it's like it's going to be a tough receiver room to crack for sure. And they can probably use some help on the edge, though. I'm not saying Jaden Woods might not just be dominant. And L.J. McCray, I'm not sure they're going to use him, but I think they're going to use him that way a good bit. So we'll see. I mean, I just don't have it in front of me. I mean, it's all broke. But remind me on some of the freshmen. I'm sorry I'm unprepared on that. But let's see. I might have the recruiting. Who are some guys that you're interested in? And I can maybe see what I got.
You still got Hezzy Kant, the 6'6". He was 320. Oh, yeah. I think he's down to like 288, the tight end out of Brunswick, Georgia. And Will Griffin, what are you seeing out of him, the quarterback from Jesuit?
I mean, he throws it probably better than any of them, right? He's got a gun. But I think he also thinks he knows more than he knows or did. I think they've maybe gotten him into kind of reality that, you know, let's tap the brakes here, man. I mean, you got a lot to learn, but he does have a lot of confidence. I mean, his numbers were insane in high school, and I mean, he's got a gun. So, I mean, he's someone certainly that's intriguing, but I mean, Gross is certainly intriguing. But again, that receiver room, but guys get hurt. I mean, Dallas Wilson still got to prove he can stay healthy. And, you know, there's going to be opportunity potentially there for him.
Speaking of health, we got Jaws from Jacksonville. How's the team health been early on in camp? I know Summerall mentioned it last week in his introductory media session, but just to refresh our memories, how's that looking? Is Cam Janes back practicing yet?
He was pulling the sled a couple of days ago. So, but I think he's okay. He's fine. It was kind of a minor thing, and why wear a guy out at the beginning of camp? He's coming back from a shoulder injury, but he built his strength back up tremendously. Rusty Witt was praising him as a guy who went from kind of a wallflower because he was lacking a little confidence coming off injury to being a leader in there. I mean, the guy's I've been waiting for him to pop since he was a freshman. He one day, we just happened to be in the indoor. I mentioned this to Jackson, I'm sure. He's probably heard it more than once. Cam James' length and get off immediately, I'm talking 3 years ago, you could see it. He was so much quicker off the line and more impressive than Sapp, right? And I was just kind of like, man, this guy's going to be something. And he just really, then he starts the Miami game to start 2024. That didn't go so well for the Gators or him. And within a couple of games, he was kind of in the background again. Last year, he did come on in the second half of the season. And Sapp, just for whatever reason, just kind of lost confidence and lost his will on some level. I mean, he was so disappointing. And James took advantage of that. So I expect him to, you know, if healthy, to have a pretty good season. So, but yeah, injury-wise, they have nothing alarming at this point that we're aware of.
It's always good to hear, and we're always talking about freshmen and then pivoted to defensive line. He's the furthest thing from a freshman as a redshirt senior, but it's the first time we're going to see him as he's on campus, and you might need to bring out that pronunciation sheet again for me, Edgar. It's Emmanuel Adebayo. What have you seen anything from him? That guy looks like an absolute specimen and looks like something we've been missing, you know, to have interiorly. Are we expecting big things out of him, or maybe just more so in kind of a role player capacity to eat up some blocks and free up some, you know, rushes for guys like Jaden Woods, Cam James, and now hopefully KJ Ford as a freshman?
Oya Badejo.
You got me there.
Well, that one Matt has trained me on. Because I thought it was Oja Badejo or something. He was like, no, it's Oya Badejo. Yeah, he is just freakishly strong, athletic, but also raw. I mean, what's he played? 2 years of college football at Jacksonville State. And he was hurt the first year, 2024. He put up some nice numbers last year. I mean, I think they want to get him on the field. They want to find ways to use him. I mean, the guy's like 6'7". And he can create all kinds of disruption in passing lanes and mismatches potentially with guys. He's 6'6.5", 303, and like cut. I mean, he's a beast. So I think they see incredible upside, but with his best football ahead of him, obviously. There was a guy, Cameron Wake, when I was covering the Dolphins, that they got from like the CFL, and he was like 27 when he came in. And you remember Cam Wake. I mean, he was good for several years. And maybe this guy's maybe not on quite that slower trajectory, but I don't think the Gators are going to get his best years. But they could get something out of him, and they're going to definitely try because he's unique.
How is he a redshirt senior with only 2 years of experience?
I couldn't go down that rabbit hole if I tried. But, you know, I just don't know. I mean, he's from England. He's from like Manchester, England.
Manchester. Yeah.
But he is definitely someone who's going to be interesting to watch how he develops during the course of this year, for sure. He might be a guy that takes a little while to get going and finds his footing and really gives you something down the stretch, because this is a football team. I mean, Dan Mullen used to say it all the time, and his first two teams certainly did it. His last team did just the opposite. But I don't care where we start, it's how we end. And, I mean, he cared, but, I mean, it's not how you start, it's how you end. And that's what I'd be looking for with this team. I mean, this team's going to continue to improve as the season goes on.
Yeah, that was just a name that popped up from my personal mailbag for today. Yeah. To get back to the fan mailbag, Emily from Jacksonville, she must be listening to us because she wants to know that crowded receiver room, who's going to lead the team in receptions and have the most receiving yards, because there is a plethora of candidates to choose from.
Plethora. Only in journalism term. I like that one. Yeah, I mean, you got to think it's going to be Singleton, right? I mean, the guy is productive, experienced. You realize Singleton's still isn't even 21. He turns 21 this month. It's incredible. He's
just
young.
Just like Boogie Flan, just turned 20.
It's crazy. Singleton, I think, turns 20. He might have just turned 20. You can look it up. I mean, 21. But he turns 21, I think, this month, like the 23rd or something, I think. So he is young, but man, I mean, 162 catches, 2,002 yards, I believe, and 12 touchdowns at the college level. That's a lot of production, and he is fast. The other day, someone was asked, it might have been Philo, fastest guy on the he's seen on playing the sport, and not in shorts and track, not on track, and he was a good track athlete too, but I think his 2 years at Georgia Tech with Faulkner, it was 8 or 11, let's just say 8, so not to be hyperbolic, 40-yard catches. He had one at Auburn, so he was totally misused at Auburn. Auburn stunk on offense. So he can get downfield. He's a big play guy, but he can, you know, get yards after catch. He's slippery. I mean, he's going to be good and productive. Now, Dallas Wilson's just a unicorn if he's healthy. We saw the Texas game. He won them that game. The spring game, he was like stole the show. But otherwise, he was just hurt. He made a nice catch against A&M for a touchdown over in the corner of the end zone. Fought a guy for the ball. But otherwise, he wasn't healthy. So if they got this all straight with his shoes and his feet, went out to the Nike facility in Beaverton, Oregon, did all this stuff on plates, power plates and all this stuff, and they got him in the right shoe. And plus, they're not going to wear him down. That's something I did actually want to talk about. The recovery is imperative with this program, right? They don't want guys on their feet all day. They want to get guys in and work them hard and get them off their feet. Get them a nap to recover. You know, they can do their classes in the afternoon, right? A lot of these guys are doing online anyway, or you can structure your schedule that way. So Billy Napier, man, would wear guys out. I mean, they would come in there early and leave late. And Tyler Miles would be running at the end of practice and stuff I would hear about. You just can't sustain that, even at that age, even at that elite athletic ability, man. You're going to wear out. So they are big about recovery. And believe me, Dallas Wilson is going to be monitored. He's going to be on a pitch count. They're not going to wear this guy out because they need him ready on Saturdays. And Vernell is obviously a great player and a talent. It's any of those three. I mean, Micah Mays has popped. I don't expect him to get the targets to lead the team, but he's going to be a factor. And T.J. Abrams looks, I think he kind of flashed at the end of last season, and his speed has gotten up there. So there are a lot of options at receiver, and I might be leaving a guy or two out.
That's awesome, Edgar. One last mailbag question. Our guy Sam from Arizona says that he is looking for one home game to go to this season. Which game are you looking forward to the most, and which game should he get to the Swamp for this fall?
I mean, I think Ole Miss is going to be electric. Maybe Summerall will channel a little McElwain 2015. Pull the stunner, and instead of, you know, dropping off the cliff by the end of the season, build on it. But that could be incredible. That atmosphere will be incredible, win or lose at Auburn. But if they go to Auburn and win in the Swamp, 3-0, possibly nudging into the rankings, and you get Ole Miss here with Trinidad Chambliss and Lacey and that team, which is a hell of a team. I mean, they're talented, playoff contender, picked to finish third in the SEC. That place is going to be rocking. So by the time you get to the Oklahoma game, which is another intriguing home game, they're coming off Georgia, a Texas visit, bye week, Georgia. Could be a little tough stretch there. And then, but, you know, South Carolina, you know, after if you win at Mizzou, 4-1 maybe, even if you lose to Ole Miss, I mean, that'll homecoming, that'll be a good game. I mean, there's some good games. But, you know, I think if you got to pick one, Ole Miss the 26th of September, is the one to, you know, circle the calendar on, because that could be really a very pivotal game for this season.
And Florida coaches win their first big home game. You think back, Billy won in the Swamp against Utah. Mullen beat LSU in year one. McElwain beat Ole Miss in the Swamp. So that first big home game, Gator coaches, successful or unsuccessful, have tended to win that game.
Yeah, that should be fun. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, you might have sold me on South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, you didn't know, we also reported last week the Gators are expected to wear a white throwback uniform homecoming week against South Carolina. Only for Wright, we reported that.
No, nice. I like those.
All right, we'll jump to our last segment, Edgar, before we wrap up. A little over, under. We've got a few questions for you. Mm-hmm. 3.5 seasons in Gainesville for Summerall. Over, under.
What'd you say again? Excuse me?
3.5 seasons in Gainesville, over or under. Did you make it to year four?
Yes. I think undoubtedly. I think this guy's the real deal. I mean, but the standard of the real deal is very high here because it's Spurrier and Urban. But, hey, if he's the third best coach in program history, I think fans would be very excited about that considering all the, you know, misfires.
Dev?
Yeah, I think that if Billy gets 4 years, he's going to get 4 years, barring bad behavior.
Sam?
You got to say over, just for the sake of the program. So hopefully it's over. Hopefully it's double the amount that the total you set there. I'm sure that's a Vegas line there, but hopefully it's way above that for the sake.
Is that
of
a Vegas line?
No, it's one I created about 10 minutes before the show, just get you on record in case things go sideways.
Because hopefully well over.
I thought Napier was going to be good last year, so I've been on record with many bad takes over the years, including Thomas Hobbs playing so much, if you recall. Worst take of my career.
Yeah, Emily still harps on that one.
You should. It was the dumbest take ever.
7.5 wins. This is a Vegas line for 2026.
I mean, that's a tough one, man. And I don't want to be negative. So I will take the over, but it's 7 or 8. They could win 6. 9 is going to be tough. But I think they're going to get to 8 wins. I mean, just based on Summerall's close game record, what is he, 15-4 in one score games, I think it is. The way the team is going to improve as the season goes on, because you were rolling your eyes when I talked about Vanderbilt and FSU, which I think they'll win those games. But yeah, I think they'll nudge over 7 and get to 8.
Does 9-3, you're fighting for a playoff spot? I know with the expansion now, we say SEC teams or maybe even some Big Ten teams can sneak in at 9-3. If those losses are the Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, are there enough quality wins on the schedule to sneak into that 12th spot?
Well, that would mean they'd beaten Ole Miss, or if you say they lose to Ole Miss, and it would mean they'd beaten Oklahoma, which should be pretty damn good this year. So they're going to have to win one of those two games to get to that. And then everything else, including going to Kentucky, which Will Stein might end up being a really interesting and dynamic coach. I don't know if he's got enough talent, but he certainly did get some players, and maybe a good quarterback from Notre Dame. And they've been getting their ass kicked at Kentucky for years. So there are just a lot of pitfalls in the schedule potentially. But, yeah, I mean, 9-3 could happen, but they're definitely going to have to win a game or two they're not supposed to.
Over, under a top 50 scoring defense. And for reference, in 2025, the Gators had the 60th ranked scoring defense and Tulane had the 59th ranked scoring defense.
I'm going to go under. I'm actually fairly optimistic about this defense because the front 7 – I think it's going to be the best they've had since the Grenard year in 19, which was a defense that gave up 15-5 a game. And then the, you know, COVID year was a disaster. And then you hired Patrick Toney, which was one of the worst tires in program history. And then you replace him with Austin Armstrong, who's doing work at Houston, but was not ready for that role. So Brad White's legit.
Yeah.
Like many under.
That's how I felt. I think we're top 10 nationally in returning production on defense as it is. Plus the infusion of Brad White and Coach Summerall. I agree. I think it's a top 50 defense, may even be better than that. Same question for the scoring offense, top 50 scoring offense over or under for reference 111th in 2025. Georgia Tech was 26th and Tulane was 67th a year ago. Will Florida have a top 50 offense this year?
That's put you roughly about 30 points a game, Edgar.
Yeah, I mean, now we're getting a little that's a toughie. I mean, I believe in Buster. I just don't. I mean, who's the quarterback? I mean, it's like these guys have one combined start in their career. There might be some games that you're kind of managing some, right? And let's see what Georgia Tech was in his first season. They were 43rd, 31-1. So, I mean, Buster, man, he's legit. It wouldn't surprise me. I'll say they'll get in the top 50. It might not be inside the top 40 or 35, but let's say they're 35 to 50. I think the guy is clearly, you know, an elite offensive mind.
That's kind of too where you worry about. Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I was going to say, you know, that cashes the bet top 50, but kind of pivoted in. You mentioned who is the quarterback, and the next over under is quarterbacks are starting a game over under 1.5.
That start the game?
Do we see two quarterbacks start at a certain point?
I think for sure.
Yeah. Just knowing Florida football, it would be wildly optimistic.
Hey, look, you know James DeVergilio, right? He does a great pod. He had a great theory. Start one the first game, start the other against Campbell. You know, see who handles it. They'll be the starter that week. You get to prepare as a starter. Both play, both games. I don't know. It's an interesting theory. I don't know if that's how they operate, but
yeah, then if the guy who wins week one starts week one and doesn't play a whole lot week two, but he wins the job and you go 2 weeks and your next game's at Auburn is pretty tough stretch there.
No, but you can play.
Talking about just starting the game and preparing for it.
Yeah, you're preparing as a starter. Maybe you play, you know, a half. I don't know. I mean, if you're comfortable, Campbell's terrible. Terrible. They were 2-10 last year. Their offense was putrid and their defense was worse. So, I mean, you can play a guy each half in that. And then FAU, as I said, I don't get to have the guy's name in front of me. He's a young 34-year-old coach and an offensive whiz, but they're not going to be able to stop Florida. So you should be able to play the other guy a good bit of that game in the second half, at least, I would think. Hope.
Zach Kittley, the former offensive coordinator at Texas Tech.
Yeah, I think he's impressive on that side of the ball, but what does he have to work with? And who knows, the portal, those kind of teams get just gutted in the portal. I don't know what FAU even has.
Careful, Edgar. The last time a directional school came into the swamp a year ago with a high-flying young offensive coach, that one ended 18-16 and was the basically the final nail in the coffin for Billy Napier last year. So I hate taking those games for granted. I think we were 17.5 point favorites against USF last year. I think we opened 25.5 this year.
It's not even close to that. I mean, Golich, you could already see coming into last year, had a program kind of trending in the right direction. There's not a whole lot of signs of that yet at FAU. I'm not saying this guy won't turn out. And defensively, they were pretty stout. This team's, I mean, literally gave up 36 a game, as most in school history last year. They'll just be able to run the ball down their throat if nothing else with Baugh.
Well, here's our next question. 1,500 yards for Jaden Ball over or under. He had 1,170 last year.
I mean, I might go on the under rushing yards, but here's what I would say. Give me 2,000, let's say 1,850 yards from scrimmage, I'll take the over on that. I think this kid is going to push toward 2,000 from scrimmage, but because that's he's going to catch a lot of balls. Go look at that Jamal Haynes if you want to go look at a guy. 5'9", 175, played at Georgia Tech, and he caught the ball, I think 81 passes under Faulkner, and rushed for 2,500 in 3 years. And he was splitting time running the ball last year. He had almost 1,000 in 2024, and he's like pint-sized version of ball, and probably not nearly the talent. He's talented, obviously, at 5'9", 175 to produce like that. But Ba is a freaking stud catching the football, in addition to just being just an elusive, powerful, you know, instinctive runner. So maybe he'll get 1,400 yards rushing, 13, whatever. He's going to catch 500 yards of balls in this offense, I think.
Justice Hayes, was he a Bama transfer? Jamal Haynes.
No, he's at three years at Tech, I think. Go look him up.
Yeah, 3 years, nearly 550 total touches and over 3,000 all-purpose yards, 25 touchdowns over 3 years.
Yeah, he really jammed in Buster's offense, that guy. I mean, Buster was salivating when he saw a guy like Baugh, who's 40 pounds, 50 pounds heavier and like 4 inches taller, right? So He's gonna do work with Ba. There's no doubt. But there are guys behind him. Duke Clark has gotten tons of praise. Tons.
Yeah, I think he's one of the fastest kids on the team, too.
And then Evan Pryor, I mean, go look at that guy. I mean, he was a 11, 12 yards a touch guy at Cincinnati. I mean, he's intriguing. So maybe Ba won't get quite the touches and work to do all that, but I don't know, man. I think they think he's pretty damn durable.
All right, last question. 1.5 over under 1.5 block punts or kicks.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, they haven't had a whole lot of those. I mean, Billy might have had two his whole time here, if not one. Mullen didn't get a bunch of those. Rules have kind of changed a bit because I always go back to the days of the Urban 06-08 team combined 17 blocks. I mean, 17 blocks in those 2 years. I mean, it's unbelievable. But I mean, it's harder to do now, but I mean, two. I mean, this Galante guy, man, is proven.
And they just added Matt McMahon, or is it Matt McMahon? Or
McMahon.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take the over. What the hell? I'd like to see a couple of block punts. I mean, especially if he's using, you know, legit guys to play on the special teams. And not because, you know, Kirby Smart made an interesting point 2 years ago, I believe. Maybe it was last year. I think it was 2 years ago in the SEC teleconference. That because of the transfer portal, the young guys, like a Gross, for example, right? You got to keep him interested and engaged. And I'm not saying that he's not one of your best options on special teams. I don't know enough. But those kind of guys you do want to kind of keep interested and involved. So you play them on special teams, and you can go back through history, guys like Keanu Neal and guys who were impactful special teams players, freshmen. So you are going to play some freshmen because you don't want them thinking they're just like in the background, but you lose some experience that way too. So it's a balancing act, but yeah, we'll give them two blocks, hopefully more.
Yeah, I'd like five or six.
For sure.
Well, we appreciate everybody. Anything else to add, Dev or Sam, before we wrap up?
All good over here.
Well, yeah, I think we covered it all. I appreciate it, Edgar.
Yeah, so as much always. For keeping my answers brief.
It's all right. Someone had to fill in for Will tonight, so I think you did a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten a word at edgewise if Will had been on here.
But we appreciate everybody for listening. Edgar, as always, we'll get him on as the season progresses. Basketball season tips off November 2nd. I believe we have Shane Matthews on the pod Thursday night, discuss the quarterback battle as well, what he's hearing and seeing throughout fall camp. And then August 24th, make sure you put this on your calendars. We have Todd Golden joining Breakfast with the Gators with an interview with our team. So we really look forward to that. Make sure you like, subscribe to our YouTube, follow us on Twitter, and we'll see you again later this week. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Thanks, Edgar.
You're welcome, guys. Thanks for having me.